It's like saying, like, we're, oh, it's the anniversary. Anniversaries are normally, like, happy. I guess there's sad anniversaries, too, but does people it, like going to those, too.
Yeah, like, it seems like anniversary kind of has positive connotations. I'm not sure. I mean, we could call it a commemoration, sort of like the day that, you know, over 2,000 Iraqis died unnecessarily because our government was telling us lies about how Iraq was somehow connected to the events of 9/11.
Right.
Without even getting started on 9/11, which I'm not prepared to open that can of worms.
Yeah, yeah. Where's the weapons of mass destruction?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we go in there and, you know, like the mission, the reason, the motivation, the justification changed like 4 or 5 times about why we were in there. And, you know, we had Colin Powell in front of the UN holding up a vial of anthrax one day. And now he says that was like the most shameful thing in his whole career that he ever did, you know, but nobody in Congress is willing to invest their political capital in a real investigation. You know, George Bush is just kind of like off free, you know, he's just out doing, bought a bunch of land in Paraguay where they have a new law that says that they don't prosecute war criminals who have been indicted internationally. They will not extradite war criminals. They will provide safe haven. So
that's interesting.
Bunch of land sitting on top of a big aquifer there too. So multi-use.
I had not heard that. That's really fascinating. You know what I did hear though, and with it as far as like world leaders getting off the hook. Well, you know, I read an article the other day that was talked about Bolivia, and they went into depth about the president of Bolivia, I believe from 1980 to 82, I forget his name off right now, but he was indicted and sent to jail, and he was supposed to serve, I believe, a life sentence, and with no accommodations. It's supposed to be all perfect, all just like any other prisoner. Well, some government inspectors finally went to the prison and checked in on like what was, and he lived a life of extreme luxury in this prison. He would never leave. He was a military dictator.
This was Augusto Pinochet?
No, it wasn't Pinochet. It was a dictator.
Oh, Bolivia?
Of Bolivia. Okay. Yeah. And he was just living it up. He had a sauna, he had an exercise room. He had like microwave, full kitchen set. He had like I don't know,
probably
he had
someone to
everything.
Cook for him.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, it was living like a life of luxury behind bars, and that was scary, you know, because it's like, you know, it just sends signal to like these other horrible people that, oh yeah, you get off, don't worry, you know, we just hold you for a little while, then we get you off, and then we put you back in power somehow, or we put your kids into power or something like that. But anyway, okay, let's get off of that topic. That's a bad topic.
Yeah. There's so much to talk about. What did you think of the protest today? Maybe we can start with some, I don't know. I mean, did you listen to any of the speeches at the rally? There was a long rally.
Yeah.
We got there just a little bit after it had started at noon, and it went until 1:30. And there were a lot of speakers, and there was some performance, some singing, and
yeah.
What did you take from that?
Well, you know, I really didn't listen. You know, I did listen to a few of them, but for the most part, I wasn't really listening. I was kind of, when I first got there, the crowds were very small, and I was like just kind of immediately disappointed. Now I'm not somewhere so much. You know, I'm over it. It was a good time. The crowds were kind of small, but
what do you mean by small?
Well, there was like, I don't know, 100 to 200 people there, and you know, and like we argued about in the car for a long time earlier today. Obviously we think that people should be showing up at these events, and like, you know, we came all the way up from Olympia, right? And we had friends coming down from Vancouver. 15 people we knew came down from Vancouver, British Columbia, which is what, a 3-hour drive, and you have to cross the demilitarized zone into the United States. And but then Seattle, huge, ginormous metropolitan city, could probably, you know, came up with like, I don't know, 100-something people.
There might have been, I sort of felt like there might have been more people who joined the actual parade or march or whatever you want to call it. And by the end, I mean, you know, it was loosely packed, taking up a whole street, like 3 or 4 lanes across for almost 2 blocks, probably. I mean, I would say there may have been 300, maybe even 400, you know, just to be generous. But I agree with you. I mean, why weren't there 10,000, you know?
Yeah.
And this has been consistent. I don't know. When we were on the way, we stopped at a cafe for some refreshments or whatever before we went. And one of the workers there was talking about this article called The Vanishing Liberal, which is an article in the most recent issue of Harper's Magazine. I'm kind of interested in that. And you know, I was like, oh, yeah, I saw that title. I subscribe to Harper's. I think it's a great magazine. And this person was like, yeah, you know, I was like, what's it about, you know? And this person was like, oh, it's about fascism. You know, it's about how we're suffering from fascism. And that was a theme that I've been picking up on lately. And I've been feeling like there's like a real kind of a serious degeneration where people have, I think some well-meaning people are lulled by the rhetoric of Obama saying, you know, I care about people, this and that. After Bush, the contrast is really extreme in terms of the words and the language and the ideas, the concepts that they put forward. But at the same time, the reality is that Obama is actually putting more money into war and more money into authoritarian structures and institutions in the homeland of security. And, and you know, like, that's one of the things that I noticed when the presidential election changed. I went through the airport and the screening process was much more extreme, much more intensive. And the guards seemed to have this new puffed up ego, like this inflated sense of authority, like they were actually doing law enforcement. That's how they acted. They were acting like cops rather than, under the Bush administration, they just kind of like shuffled around and they were like, oh, hate to be here, just a job, you know. And it was that was in the Seattle airport. I was flying to Minneapolis, and it was totally different in the Minneapolis airport, I must say, where I like sat down with a TSA guy and smoked a couple cigarettes and just like shot the shit, and we had, you know, a nice time. But
well, yep. You know, it's hard to say. You know, I mean, like, obviously, I mean, I think that things feel worse now than they did under Bush. I don't think it's necessarily that it is worse. I just think it feels worse. And I think what it mainly, the reason why it feels worse is the expectations were high and the outcome was low. And I'm one of those people who, like, partly thinks that maybe Obama would like to do a lot more than he is doing. But on the other end, you know, I also believe that Bush wanted to do a lot more than he was capable of doing. And the middle ground is of, like, what the far right, when they come into power, can, like, do, and the moderately left, which is the only left that's allowed to be in power, can do, is scarily to the right, you know, these days.
But why is the Obama administration and a Democratic-controlled Congress increasing the military budget and spending more money and actually, like, verbally and, you know, like, vocally, basically, he's, like, pushing the idea of nuclear deterrence, where like during his, I mean, I feel like there, like he's done some 180 degree flips here. Whereas he was like talking about nuclear disarmament before, now he's talking about for security, we actually need to increase our capacity to rake nuclear destruction over the entire surface of the globe. I mean, which we have the capacity to destroy the world, more than once already, which you'd think would be sufficient, but I mean, it's kind of like that. I think part of it is that it just doesn't make sense and it's just crazy. And that's part of it, you know, and like, there's no reason to even try to understand like what's going on in the mind of Obama, what's going on in the mind of the Bush administration, Hillary Clinton, Rahm Emanuel, all these people, you know, like there's really no way to know without knowing them and being able to sit down with them and like actually, you know, have an interaction that's real. And so,
well, you know, we can speculate, conjecture. You know, I think we're putting ourselves. You know, the audience is listening. We're on the radio right now.
That's right.
That means that we're experts.
We're broadcasting. We're broadcasting to the world. We shouldn't show any weakness.
Exactly. We have to pretend.
We don't make mistakes.
We know everything. We could answer that question. We just don't feel like it.
What we say is the truth, and you'll never hear us change our minds because we're right all the time.
I was watching. I watched the Daily Show the other day, and I'm horribly addicted to Daily Show these days. So I go through time periods where I watch it.
That's Jon Stewart.
Yeah, Jon Stewart. I could tell you're a fan, right? You obviously watch it all the time.
Well, I've seen Jon Stewart do some pretty awesome stuff.
Right. And the other day he last Friday's show, he started a show differently, which is like a shocking thing. You're like, what's going on here? He's not just sitting behind his desk.
What did he do? What was happening?
He did an imitation Glenn Beck show. And it was an imitation Glenn Beck show for like 20 minutes of his show. He just went into like this like...
That's most of his show, isn't it? Including advertisements?
Yeah.
Because it's a
half
an hour
totally.
Show.
It was like this huge... yeah, exactly. It was like the vast majority of the show was him talking and doing chalkboard drawings and talking about basically making fun of how incredibly stupid Glenn Beck is, because Glenn Beck was doing some things. Glenn Beck apparently went on his radio show and said that people should go to their churches and they should look through their church's information. If they see anything that says anything about social justice
or community
that he should they should not trust the church and they should look for another church.
Raise a ruckus.
And
oh,
that's what he
boy
said.
Social justice. Hey everyone, go out, buy a Hummer and run over every fire hydrant that you see, and you know, and go like, you know, throw stink bombs at your local fire department and your local police department too, because those are socialist institutions. I'm sorry. And tell me, you know, Glenn Beck told you this. Glenn Beck told you to do this.
Yeah.
So like, oh,
it was
Glenn
it was,
Beck, man. Yeah. Wow. What an interesting, very interesting person.
I've never watched a show. I only see a show through the Daily Show. So
do you know how
I'm
old
extremely
he is?
Skewered. He's young, right?
I don't know. I wonder.
He seems young. I don't know how old he is.
I don't know. We could Wikipedia him. See?
Yeah.
You know.
Anyway, like, he's an idiot.
He makes a lot of money. How much money does he make, do you think?
Oh, I don't know.
I heard Rush Limbaugh's making like $400,000 a year or something, or like $4 million. I don't know. Like a lot, something with a four, but a lot, you know, and it's pretty interesting. Like, you know, I don't know. I mean, does it take that much creativity to go on the air and like sow confusion and despair and hate and division and lies? Does it take a lot?
Apparently, it doesn't seem to take a lot. I don't, you know, I mean, like, that's the thing. You know, it's like, he's 46, apparently.
46.
I don't know. I mean, he just seems like one of those people that, like, normally good, hard-working folk would just avoid, because
Has shifted.
He's, like, completely paranoid. He seems to be suffering from, like, paranoid delusion. He's thinking about it to, like, a huge degree, about what's different. What's different between Glenn Beck? How can he pull off this delusional sort of, like, talking atmosphere? And I think I've figured it out. Americans suffer from the only point of view that's correct is my own. And that's it. And I am correct.
My way or the highway.
Right. Yeah. It's only a point of view that's correct is my own. But then they get fed their point of view through corporate media like Glenn Beck and all these other jerks. And then they spit it back out, but it's their own. And we have never been taught. Our school systems don't teach. Our other ways of being don't teach. We don't teach critical listening skills,
critical thinking
in general, and we therefore are, like, devoid of being able to, like, make this one connection. This is the one connection, which is that, you know, I'm a reasonable thinking person. I'm a human being. That person right there is a reasonable thinking person. We both have pretty much similar interests in mind, as far as, like, you know, wanting to live a life that we can enjoy, that where we get our needs met. But they never make that connection that person's trying to do the same thing as they are. They just make the connection. They don't put themselves in the other person's shoes.
There's no like training or like a cultural emphasis on empathy, on, you know, attempting to be considerate of others based on, you know, the realization that we're really, you know, all connected, interconnected. And, like, so, you know, if we hurt someone else, we're really hurting our own self ultimately. I mean, that's what I really believe, you know. And you know, as far as being right, yeah, you know, I like to be right, but I also realize that I'm not right all the time, and that I do make mistakes, and I am willing to change my mind, you know. And I think that's a big difference between, you know, someone like George Bush, who goes on and says, you know, that he never makes mistakes. I mean, we had a president who believed that he never made. And that's pretty insane, I think, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, it's people make mistakes every day, like, all the time. You know, if we're really honest with ourselves, we're going to be able to admit that.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, people get on politicians about being flip-floppers. I change my mind pretty regularly. You know,
that's healthy.
I like to be always right. It's true. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. However, by being always right, what I basically mean is that, like, well, if I get any new information, I'm really, really capable of changing my mind. And, you know, I could do a 180 on a topic. It might take a little bit of information, but I'm willing to, like, listen to, like, people who are willing to, like, to give me some good arguments for why I should change my mind.
So it's good to be open-minded.
Yeah, it's good to be open-minded. It's good to be always, it's good to like, try to be always right in that sense, because if you really are trying to be always right, you're not, like, if evidence is pointed at you, if you need to be always right, then you should maybe always be, try to always be logical. And, like, logic means that, like, you know, I don't know, I'm not going to try and get into the what logic means, but basically what I mean by that is that, like, if you have a hypothesis, you should consider what you think it scientifically, like scientists consider what they think, which is everything that you think is a hypothesis.
It's a suggestion.
It's just a hypothesis. It's a theory.
Yeah.
And some of the theories like gravity and stuff like that are pretty solid theories, but they're still technically theories according to science.
There's no proof. You can't prove. Nobody can really prove how gravity works.
Right.
It's theoretical, but I mean, obviously, that's one of those weird conundrums. Anyway, theory of relativity.
Yeah.
Like back to Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and these guys. I know Rush Limbaugh was hospitalized at one point because he had a, I think either a Vicodin or an Oxycontin addiction that he had. It got pretty bad at one point. I remember Glenn Beck getting hospitalized as well, and I don't know if that was like a chemical abuse issue. Do you recall that at all?
I do. Glenn was in, I can't tell you exactly what was wrong with him.
Uh-huh.
I felt like maybe it was like
might
he
have
got
been
sick.
Like appendicitis or
yeah.
some other just mm-hmm. like a physical ailment that he had. I can't remember.
But he was hospitalized in Hawaii.
Hmm.
And apparently in Hawaii, and I did not know this until like I heard about him being hospitalized there. But afterwards he came back and he came out and he announced at a press conference. He said, you know, I went to Hawaii hospital and I had the best service in the world. The best, that's American healthcare. You know, he just had to blow it up being like, this is the best healthcare in the world, the United States' healthcare system. And apparently Hawaii's healthcare system is universal. They have universal healthcare. I did not know that.
So did the state pay for Glenn Beck's treatment then, or
I'm not sure if the state paid. I'm not sure what the Hawaii system is. But they have some sort of universal healthcare system.
Uh-huh.
And he was just raving about how good the healthcare was in Hawaii. Well, you know, whether some of it's private or not, he probably went to like, you know, it's a small island. There probably is only one like really well-equipped hospital. The private hospitals are never like necessarily as good equipped as like the public ones if there's like a huge public hospital. But yeah, they basically have universal healthcare in Hawaii, which I had no idea.
That's great. It's great for the people of Hawaii.
Yeah, they've had it since, and not only, it's not a new thing. They've had it since Hawaii became a state,
which was pretty recently.
Yeah,
was that in the 50s or
50s? Yeah, 50 something.
And yeah, I think there's another state that has that. Maybe Massachusetts has something pretty close to single payer universal health care in the state. And mm-hmm. it may be one of those, you know, I have no idea. I mean, not single payer, but universal coverage.
Right. That is Massachusetts. They have, there's their system. I think Hawaii's is more progressive. Not that I know that for sure.
I'd really like to meet Glenn Beck. He seems like a very interesting person. And, you know,
well, he's from around here. You know that, right? He got the key to some city in Washington. I forget which one it was.
Maybe it was Lakewood or Burien or Bothell or
I'm not sure.
I don't remember.
I think eastern side of the state town.
I think he had an appearance at Key Arena or some place where there was a large crowd that they attended, and I remember there was a protest. There's some story about that. That was interesting. I think that was last summer, or maybe even the summer before. I wonder if Glenn Beck is a happy person. Curious about that.
Well, you know, he's, I mean, like, he is what he is.
Maybe in his own way.
You know, like, the other thing, the interesting thing about the Rush Limbaugh, right? You know, I mean, these are, like, the heroes of the
There's
right.
Bill O'Reilly. Who's the other guy?
In
Hannity.
Culture.
Hannity. Michelle Malkin.
Yep.
Hannity.
Rush Limbaugh is probably one of the biggest jerks. But, you know, he got in trouble with the basically doing heroin. You know, doing the pill form of heroin.
Oxycontin, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is
it's
basically
synthetic.
Heroin. Yeah.
It's not an opiate, but it has a similar effect.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty close to being like a rich man's heroin.
So you think Rush Limbaugh is a jerk?
Yeah, he's a jerk. But the one of the interesting things.
Tell me more about this. I want to know about
why.
I'm not gonna bust your balls or anything, but I'm interested to hear.
Well, one of the interesting. I read an article. He got caught coming back into the country from the Dominican Republic a couple of years ago. He went there with about four other guys, like pretty well-known type figures who he was hanging out with. And he came back on a private plane funded by the radio station with four dudes. That's all that was on there. There was no women on this plane. And he brought into the country a prescription pill bottle full of Viagra, but the prescription was made out to his doctor and not to him. And he had like 29 pills of Viagra, and that was when he was returned into the United States. It was kind of an interesting thing because Dominican Republic, of course, is one of those places. If you went there and you're a wealthy guy, you could get away with doing a lot of indiscretion. You could more or less order up as many prostitutes as you want.
It's probably a pretty vigorous prostitution industry in that.
Yeah,
place.
You know, or else, you know, I mean, there's like two, more or less two options. You know, they were either like having prostitutes, or else, I don't know, they were all getting together with each other. I mean, which is fine. It's just fine. It's just, you know.
It's hypocritical.
It's hypocritical, right.
Isn't he...
a gay basher? Yes.
Well, and doesn't he like to sort of present himself as being someone who is intensely moral and, you know, believes in family values and stuff like that? And
I mean, I think so. Like I said, he's another guy who I don't really listen to his show. You know, I did canvassing for a little while, and one time I canvassed a lady, and that's where you go door to door knocking on people's houses and asking them for money to support the environment. And I knocked on one door, and the lady was like, "No, I can't support you," you know. And then I was like giving her all these facts and all these things like that. I was really into it at the time.
What were you canvassing for? What was the issue?
The issue then I was canvassing for, it was for the Sierra Club, and we were fighting to
protect the environment,
and specifically we were working to pass like this piece of legislation that had to do with car emissions. This was like 4 years ago. In
was
Washington
this,
State.
This
it didn't
is
really
door
go
to door.
Anywhere. Yeah, this was door to door.
In Olympia?
No, in Seattle. And so like the lady answered the door, and she basically said that, I was like, "Well, where do you get your..." She's like, "I've never heard those facts before." I was like, "Where do you get your news?" She says, "I get all my news from Rush Limbaugh. All of it."
And she was pretty proud of that, it sounds
like.
She was
a loony bin too. I mean, it was just like a real, really obvious loony bin. But the Fox News crowd, they have the one thing that they have going, that when we think about like some of these people who listen to Fox News and listen to like these crazy right wing radio people is that they really, for the most part, these people are like that. They listen to just their one station. They have one station that they go to for their news, and it's Fox News.
It's fascinating. I'd really like to understand the psychology that goes into the people feeding on this regularly, because my experience is that when I watch Fox News, when I watch any television these days, I get really sick. I mean, it makes me feel like physically ill pretty much, and it's really hard for me to do a lot of the time. I mean, sometimes I can handle it. It's mostly the commercials, sometimes the news stuff, But Fox News is like a whole nother level. Mainly the cable. I don't have as much problem with the local network in general. Anyway, I don't watch that much TV, but I know the cable Fox News is much worse. The Fox network, I should say. I don't like calling it Fox News because I don't believe it's
worthy
really,
of the name. News.
Yeah, I don't think it's. I think it's more like Fox, like propaganda,
Fox.
Like
propaganda and lies, 24/7.
Corporate, you know, media, big media power over society. Total lies, obfuscation, you know, people like, you know, scapegoating all the problems onto the wrong people.
Fair, imbalanced lies.
Yeah, and the agenda is corporate power, you know, and it's pretty obvious. And so for me, it's just like it's hard to watch it, but I'd really like to understand, and I'm sure there's a lot of information and a lot of studies that have been done about this, about why the Fox network is so appealing and has such a big audience, and why there's such a big draw. I mean, I think it's because actually I read a book about this called The Left Hand of God by a guy named Rabbi Michael Lerner. And and that was pretty good. And the book talked about sort of the idea was that people are drawn to this right wing idea, these ideas, this sort of culture because it has a meaning. There's a spiritual backing, and that the left is suffering in part because it doesn't have this sense of connection, spiritual connection with the world, that most people really need that, you know. And you know, maybe some people don't, but maybe some people aren't really being honest with themselves about you know, their place in the world, and you know, I think there's a lot of fear, and you know, in some circles it's like not cool to like be honest and say, hey, I'm scared, you know, or something like that. And you know, people like kind of like beat up on each other for, you know, admitting stuff like that. And in the right, you know, they say, you know, we're on God's side, blah blah blah, you know, this and that. And so they appeal to that need for like a moral sense, when in actuality the people on the left in the labor movement, in the, you know, pro-environment movement, in the pro-justice movement, strong communities, the healthcare movement, that's the real moral authority right there. You know, the left has the real moral authority in saying, you know, let's stop the abuses of the corporations. Let's stop this harmful economic activity. Why should anybody make private profit off something that's destructive, that's hurting people, even killing people? I mean, people make money off war, and it's like our Congress people are walking dead, and they can't even, you know, put together a rational sentence about how wrong it is that anyone would, you know, make money on war, on killing, on, especially when it's a war of conquest. I, you know,
well, they you know, all our congressmen are in it. We get it to the
media.
They're all in on it. You know, they're all like they're all part of the game.
Are they? I mean, or are they just like?
Oh yeah, man, they're silly. You know,
I mean, I think I don't know. I don't know if I believe that. I mean, I think some of them are in on it clearly, no question about it. Some of them, you know, are like hook, line, and sinker. There's some very, you know, wrongful behavior and activity going on, and I think some of them are just kind of like, we don't know what to do. We don't know how to, you know, function. And like, it seems like there's just not a network that they have that they can like support each other. Makes sense. There's over 500 people in Congress. Why can't they form some sort of union that says, you know, we're against these certain things, and well, then, you
yeah,
know,
like I said, why can't
be strong?
They? Because they're in on it. You know, I mean, this is like a back. This is like a.
There's answers. People have studied this. People have studied this.
They're the, I mean, like, the okay, the clear thing is I'm not saying, like, necessarily that they have to be the most corrupt people in the world, but from my understanding of, like, economics and political theory, as far as, like, the two collide, and it's very limited, but it basically says that, like, if you're not a pro-business candidate, then you can't win an election in this country because you will be outbought unless you're independent wealthy. If you're independently wealthy, then chances are then you're going to be a pro-business candidate anyway. So what that means is that, like, especially at the highest level where, like, there's almost no hope of getting someone in there, like the Senate versus the House, they're all big businessmen. You know, the Democrats, there's no difference between the Democrats and Republicans. Well, if you're well connected, then you got money coming in. You're influenced by the business side.
If you know all the people with money, then it's easy to ask them for money. And you know, if they trust you to maintain the status quo, then hey, you know, that's just like
exactly. And they're never going to change their mind. They're not going to change their mind for us. You know, I mean, I don't think that maybe necessarily.
Maybe we can get through to them. You know, we can appeal to their sense of conscience.
They're slugs, dude. They're slugs. You know what I mean? They're like. They don't have a brain. They don't have, like, an ability to function. For, like, small things, you can get them to do it.
It's they have all, real the cares.
No, they don't. I mean, you know, I mean, not in, like, the sense that we have real cares. Because, like, their real cares aren't nearly, like, similar to ours.
You don't think they care about people?
I'm just saying that, like, if we went up to them and we could get our congressman to do, like, a symbolic gesture about some sort of thing or another. And they would do that. If it was a good cause, they would do that. They might throw a little bit of money towards this or that or another, more towards
especially towards if it was a vocal, visible sort of campaign.
Exactly. But if it was something that, like, was, like, kind of, like, directly opposing the interests of the businesses, there's zero chance for it to ever pass.
I mean, the whole system. I've been, you know, pretty frustrated, and I'm, you know, thinking more and more that there's something fundamentally wrong with the system at the root level in terms of the profit system. And, you know, and I hope, you know, for a day when perhaps the system can be reformed, but I don't know if that even makes sense. I think that the nature of the system of, you know, the concept that success is measured in material or financial terms, then that's a problem. But if we had, you know, a system that said, oh, success is in terms of what you can do to be of service to your fellow beings on this planet, then we would have a different type of society, most certainly. And so I, you know, I grew up in an owning class family, you know, and had that experience. I've had that conditioning, and you know, I love my parents and I love my whole family, and you know, I have nothing against them personally, and I'm glad that I have that perspective, actually. And I mean, I have, like, very little ambition in terms of, like, my personal economic interests. I'm really, you know, turned off by the whole thing of, like, you know, going out for money or, like, being like, I want, you know, to be able to afford to do anything I want, you know, like, I'd like that, but I understand how the market works and investments, and it's just not a pretty picture, and I think there is a better way to have the world be, anyway, and there's a better way for the world to be than this, and it's really bad, and that's a thing that we don't get here in America, that we don't get to understand because of the media, and we don't see how bad it is, and
yeah,
we're very sheltered,
cushioned, you know. But I mean, most people are cushioned.
It's bad. I mean, like, the conditions in some places around the world are extremely bad. There are probably over 7 billion people on the planet now. And over 1 billion of them suffer from extreme
chronic hunger,
where they're hungry all the time and never get enough food to eat, and chronic malnourishment, and you know, and the thing is that, you know, America's falling apart, and if our politicians don't stand up and say the reason is because of this system that we have and the power that corporations wield over the economy and over the government, then what's going to happen is that our government is going to slowly erode. It's going to be privatized and actually taken over by these corporations that are doing all the harm. And it's just going to be that much worse. We're going to lose freedom of speech. We're going to find people are getting locked up in internment camps for expressing dissent. You know, unless we really, I think people have to really look out for each other, because I think this is real, you know, and I think the trend right now is it's a downward slide. And if Palin and Glenn Beck get into the White House in any shape or form, if a right-wing candidate gets elected after Obama, that...
But see, that's the thing, though. It's like, you know, that's the difference.
Because shouldn't fear that.
No, I'm just saying that was the what really kind of astonished people was when like Obama came to power and he shifted the government a little bit. He did shift it pretty solidly to the left as compared to like he put it back to where Clinton had put it in a lot of ways. It takes some time to roll back some of those horrible things that Bush put in, but he's been pushing it, the government, to do like some progressive things. I'm not going to be a totally downer on him.
And increasing the military budget.
Well, you know, that's what that, you know, there's evidence to say that like if that that's what's that's what's supporting our military. That's what's supporting our economy right now. So it does make sense if you look at it like that. You know, because that's what matters to
that's
to
like
these
half
people.
Of our economy is military spending.
Well, it's a good portion, and it's
half of the income tax toward that.
Yeah, so like, that's half of our government money.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and so that's why we have wars right now, because like economically, it's the only thing that makes sense for America. And that sounds ridiculous, right? But that's what makes sense. And so we can expect, like, these people aren't just they're not evil. I don't want to point out that they're evil. I'm just saying that like they have to like by the definition they're what they think their job entails is their country has to stay on top, which is America. They need to stay on top, and in order to do that, we have to outcompete people in business. And the only way we're going to be able to do that right now is through using our military, because we don't make anything anymore, and because we live a lifestyle that really uses too much resources beyond our means.
Mm-hmm.
And so like they have to preserve, you know, they could want to do whatever, but the thing is like, you know, Americans will react badly if Obama pulled the troops and like our economy plummeted. I'm not saying it's not necessarily true that would, but there's some evidence that says that ending the wars would actually make our economy, our GDP shrink.
Well, honestly, in a neutral environment, I think that a strong president could pull the troops, could make a vast, sweeping, poetic, eloquent apology to the world for U.S. international policy over the last 100 years, start closing international bases, military bases, and transition in a very methodical and regular, careful, safe way to a peaceful society, move all those soldiers, retrain them into civilian pursuits, doing environmental restoration. You know, we can completely reform our economy, have guaranteed employment for everyone, you know, and say, hey, maybe people are only going to be able to work 20 hours a week, but like, you know, everyone's going to have enough food to eat, and we're going to focus on community, and we're going to focus on taking care of each other rather than putting each other down. Right. And that's what it's about. I mean, because we're human beings, not machines. You know, we have feelings, we have needs, biological needs, and, you know,
we
all deserve to be treated well. We deserve to be happy in life, and, you know, it's wrong for people to hurt each other. You know?
Well, I mean, we're there. The question is not, I mean, obviously, I would love it. I mean, like, if Kucinich had won the presidency, for example, and that's, to some degree, that's why I get bummed out about Kucinich, because it's, to me, it's like a false hope, right? Because Kucinich, of course, if he had become president and through some miracle of creation wasn't assassinated or whatever and was able to, like, do his entire platform, which would be a miracle of creation, because, like, say he did win the presidency, you know, there's no way that the House and Senate would roll over and be like, okay, well, we're going to do it your way, Kucinich. You know what I mean?
But he could rally the people. That's a thing from the position of president.
But what would the people do? Well, the people would have to reform the entire country.
Learn a lot.
Well, no, they would just have to – they'd have to throw out everybody in power, take over the government – completely redo the Constitution of the United States.
I do think the Constitution needs to be probably redone, some parts more than others. Hey, right. Bruce, I think we should do a station ID and maybe take a break. What do you think?
Yeah, let's how about if we, you know what, we're coming to the end of our show here, actually.
Okay.
Let's do, how about if we play that song that you wanted to play?
Okay, yeah.
And then
you're listening to KOWA, KOA 106.5 FM, broadcasting out of Media Island in Olympia, Washington. That was Faith No More, We Care A Lot from 1985.
All right. Well, we're back. I feel like we have a couple more slight announcements to make.
Yeah, before we say goodbye for this week and bid you all adieu and say have a wonderful week, we do have a couple announcements.
The first one is coming up on April 9th through the 11th, Friday through Sunday, at Evergreen State College. There's going to be a Latin American Solidarity Conference.
Sounds awesome.
Oh, it's so sweet. Let me tell you about it. All right, so we got Jesse Friesen from the Real News Network coming to talk to us about his scoop on the Honduran election fraud. Then we have Carlos Martinez, who's coming to talk to us about his new book, Venezuela Speaks, Voices from the Grassroots. We can learn a little bit about how Venezuela solved their problem with their horrible former, you know, government structure. And next on that list of people, we've got people speaking on Colombia. We've got people speaking on El Salvador. We've got people speaking on socialism for the 21st century. And it's going all the way through Sunday at 2 p.m., where we finish off the day with Father Roy Bourgeois of the School of America's Watch, which has done amazing things since the beginning of its long journey years ago. To fight the U.S.'s training of military dictators in Latin America and their death squad leaders. So he's a fascinating guy. He's been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize in the past, and that is April 11th, 2 p.m., Evergreen State College, Lecture Hall 1. And if you want, you can check out our websites, www.nwlasconference.wordpress.com, and you can also give a call to 360-753-0499 if you have some questions.
360-753-0499. And hey, Bruce, that sounds like a really awesome and fascinating weekend conference. And if I want to fun, and I'm very curious, and it sounds very interesting. Are there any costs? Do I have to register in advance, or can I just show up?
You certainly can just show up. We have, if you're coming in from out of town and you are looking to find some sort of sleeping arrangement, we're trying to hook people up with that. And you can go to our website and register there. If you're interested in donating, we're asking people who are able to donate $10 to $40 for the entire weekend. And I know it's tough, but, you know, we're putting on an excellent conference. And so hopefully people would be interested, if they can, to throw down. You can go to the website at nwlasconference.wordpress.com and donate as well.
NWLAS
Conference.
Conference at WordPress.
WordPress.com.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it should be pretty fun. And what are we going to talk about next week?
Well, I don't know. I mean, well, I did go on this pretty awesome 10-day meditation retreat. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that.
That's right.
The other thing that I've been thinking about a lot recently is the Bohemian Grove, and I'm interested in studying about that more and learning about that, and maybe talking a little bit about that and some of my thoughts about that. So that's a possible topic for next week.
What is the Bohemian Grove for the people who are uninitiated in the sort of reprehensible situation that the Bohemian Grove represents?
Well, the Bohemian Grove is basically a place, and it's owned and operated by the Bohemian Club, which is a organization based in San Francisco. They have a building in San Francisco as well as the Grove. I don't know what other properties they have, but it's basically the Bohemian Grove is the location of a meeting of some of the world's most powerful men They meet there every summer and participate in what's called a summer encampment. And it's a two-week plus sort of three weekends and 2 weeks deal, about 16 or 17 days worth. I think maybe it's even 3 weeks long. I don't know. But it's usually in July, and that's an interesting subject topic that I would like to talk about at some point in the future. I do have an announcement about an event that I'm working on this week that I'd like to share with everyone as well. And on that announcement is that on Thursday, March 25th, this Thursday at the Olympia Library at 5 p.m., there will be a presentation by a peace activist named Dana Visali on Afghanistan. And Dana has been traveling in Afghanistan the first part of March this year with Global Exchange. And on his travels there with Global Exchange, the purpose was to study the effect of war on women, children, and the environment, and also look at the effect of war on the potential to transition to a sustainable society. So a society that's not living at the expense of the health and well-being of the planet. Anyway, so that's Thursday, March 25th from 5 till 7 p.m. at the Olympia Library. The event is free. And if you want, you can donate, make a donation to help defray the costs of Dana's travel. Other than that, it's free. So
who's putting that on?
That is being sponsored by the Olympia Fellowship of Reconciliation.
Great. Hey, that was, by the way, I just want to say that like the Friday vigil, mm-hmm. I was very impressed. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. Yeah, I enjoy it. It's fun. The band is down there. The weather was great this week, and it's likely that we'll have a lot more very nice days Friday evenings, late afternoon evenings to do that. So it's a great place to be on a Friday evening from 4:30 until 6 near the Kissing Statue at Percival Landing in Olympia, Washington. Should we say goodbye now to everyone?
Yeah, let's say goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye, our fellow listeners. We love you.
KOWA. LP. Olympia, Washington, 106.5 FM, broadcasting on the right-hand side of the dial, broadcasting to the world.
Okay, here we go.
Peace.
Mind over matters.
We come in peace.
And I am very serious.